In Paul's sermon at Antioch, he's briefly recounting Israel's history because he's speaking to Jews. And he refers to a statement made by God concerning David. I have found David, the son of Jesse, a man after my own heart, who will do all my will. That's the second time that statement's made. The first time is made back in the 13th chapter of 1 Samuel, and I'd like for you to turn your Bibles there. For all of us who are Bible students, at least for me, I won't say that's a troubling statement, but sometimes it's kind of hard to reconcile that. Because most of us, being good Bible students, are very familiar with David's sin, adultery and murder. And yet, God calls him a man after his own heart. Now, some say, well, he made that statement before David did that. Well, that's a poor excuse because God knows everything. God knew David was going to do that, and he still calls him a man after his own heart. But I think, going back there to 1 Samuel, the 13th chapter, I think it's important to understand he says that in contrast to Saul. Now, understand that God chose both of those people. All the rest of the kings either came to power by virtue of being a prince, the son of the previous king, or by assassination or whatever, military coup. But the first two kings of Israel, God chose, including Saul. And you may remember, going clear back to the 8th chapter of this book, that the people were demanding a king, and that's the right word. They demanded a king. They didn't want Samuel's sons to take over because they weren't any good. And they demanded, they wanted a king so they can be like all the other nations. So Samuel tells that to God, and God says, let's give it to him, in essence. So he chooses Saul. And he chooses Saul the same way people would choose a leader. You may or may not be familiar with this, but, and you can Google this, those of you who have that capability. Since 1900, in every presidential election in our country, 70% of the time, the tallest candidate wins. And Saul was head and shoulders above everyone else. A goodly person, the Bible calls him. He was tall. They wanted a king like all the other nations, so God gave them one. And they were, in fact, rejecting God being their king, because that's what he really wanted, but they demanded a king. So God gave him one and gives him this man, Saul. Well, he chooses him, and at first, Saul has some pretty good success. We're going to go through just a little history, and I'm just going to highlight a few things here so that we can see kind of how things are going. He chooses him. He's taller than everybody else. And right at first, he has some pretty decent success. Of course, he's got Samuel, the man who's about to kind of go out of power because he's going to be leaving this earth. But at first, he has some pretty good success. And let's see what... Yes, chapter 8, verses 19 through 22. Now, this is kind of an important thing. There's little pieces of information here that I think will give us a clearer picture why God ends up, after choosing Saul, rejecting him. And in short, we could just say it was because he wasn't a man after God's own heart, and David was, but I think it's worthy of looking at these pieces of information. Chapter 8, verses 19 through 22. This is when they demand their king. I'm sorry, I'm looking at my notes wrong. And he goes out and has some success. lost here on my notes here. He slays the Ammonites is what I'm looking for and has real good success. But he has 330,000 men. He calls all the Israelites and those of Judah. And he has 330,000 men, and that's pretty important. Because when he begins to reign alone, in chapter 13, verse 1, 1 year after this, he begins to reign. Now he's into his second year of Israel. Verse 2, now he's got 3,000 men. Now that's quite a reduction. And I don't know if because of his success with the 300,000 men that he thought maybe he got a little puffed up. Because that's quite a reduction. Well, so Jonathan, his son, in verse 2, goes out and smites a garrison of the Philistines. And, of course, Saul gets credit for it, tells us down there. And so now he's got the Philistines are all stirred up. Now, this isn't a particular war that he was told to go fight. But, after all, they're in the promised land, and we know who their enemies are. So the Philistines are gathered together in verse 5. So they're now being invaded by the Philistines. Verses 6 and 7, we find out that, well, the people kind of start deserting him. They're hiding in caves and in rocks and in thickets. They even escape clear over to the Jordan. Now, way back in chapter 8, he was told to go to Gilgal by Samuel. So Samuel is the spokesman of God at this time. He's told to go to Gilgal and wait 7 days until Samuel comes. So that part of the commandment he keeps. But he gets over there and he sees everything that's going on. In verses 8 through 10, he tells the people to bring him a burnt offering. And so he starts offering that up. And as soon as he had made an offering in verse 10, behold, Samuel came, and Saul went out to meet him, that he might salute him. Verse 11, and Samuel said, what hast thou done? Now he starts making excuses. He says, because I saw that the people were scattered from me. His people, his guys have deserted him. And you didn't come when you said you were going to come. And the enemies, they've got me surrounded. Now, what happened to all that cockiness that he had to reduce his army from 330,000 down to 3,000? What happened? His only command from Samuel was to go to Gilgal and wait till he came. So he's kind of like Peter looking at the water. He starts getting scared. He runs out of patience waiting for Samuel. But Samuel does finally come. Verse 13. Samuel said to Saul, thou hast done foolishly. Thou hast not kept the commandment of the Lord thy God, which he commanded thee. For now would the Lord have established thy kingdom upon Israel forever. But now thy kingdom shall not continue. The Lord has sought him a man after his own heart. And the Lord hath commanded him to be captain over his people. Because thou hast not kept that which the Lord commanded thee. Now this may seem, it does to me in some ways seem, he gets the kingdom stripped from him by basically disobeying a simple command. And that command was to go to Gilgal and wait for Samuel. And he would tell him what to do from then on. But he disobeyed that. And so those of us who are Bible students, we think, well, that doesn't hardly seem as bad as what David did. To me, as a man thinking about it, it seems to me like David violated at least 2 of the 10 commandments. And you can make the case that he violated 4. He commits adultery. You're not, and the other command, not to covet your neighbor's wife. You could say that he stole his neighbor's wife and then murders him. So when I'm looking at these two stories, I'm thinking, seems like David's sin was worse. So how do we reconcile that? Well, look at verse 13 and 14 again. When he tells him, he says, I've sought a man after my own heart to be captain over my people. That's the subject at hand. I want somebody who's going to rule over my people, who seeks me for their help and their guidance. We know that he's talking about David. We know that. And David does that. He does that faithfully. He rules Israel faithful. In fact, all other kings of Israel are compared to David. David set the standard. When David sinned, unlike Saul, he didn't make a bunch of excuses. He promptly acknowledged his sin. He was willing to do whatever he could to make it right, although the harm was already done. There's no record that David ever repeated that sin. And for those of us that are familiar with that, that's what's so stunning, I think, or shocking about David doing that, because it's so out of character. That wasn't David's normal, habitual, routine way of life. It was out of character for David to not obey God. It was out of character for Saul to obey God. Sin was a rarity in David's life. But I want to look at the story about Saul that's really more familiar. It's in chapter 15, but it was in this 13th chapter where that statement is made, contrasting Saul to David. God says, I want a man after my own heart. So we see a little bit in chapter 13 that he didn't follow orders. Let's go into chapter 15. But before we go over there, just for another little juicy morsel of information here. In chapter 14, once again, Saul's son, Jonathan, of a totally different character than Saul, he tells his armor bearer in verse 6, Jonathan said to the young man that bear his armor, come and let us go over to the garrison of these uncircumcised. It may be that the Lord will work for us. There is no restraint or no limitation to the Lord to save by many or by few. This gives us a little bit of information about Jonathan. No wonder his soul was knit together with David. David wasn't afraid to fight Goliath. Jonathan's not afraid to fight these garrisons of Philistines. But, oh, Saul over there, well, my army left me, and you didn't come, Samuel, when you said you were going to. And besides, look at the enemy out there. And, of course, when David goes out to fight Goliath, the same thing. Saul wasn't out there fighting him. Jonathan seems to have that same spirit that David did. And we see that little piece of information there that I thought was worthy of looking at. Chapter 15, the very famous verses here. To give you the story that you already know, Samuel comes to Saul and tells him that he's supposed to go utterly destroy the Amalekites. Utterly destroy them. Spare them not, but slay both man and woman, infant and suckling, ox and sheep, camel and ox. Well, you're familiar with the story. He doesn't do it. And in fact, look at verse 9. But Saul and the people spared Agag and the best of the sheep and of the oxen and of the fatlings and the lambs and all that was good. And look at this word. In fact, I highlighted this in my Bible. And would not... Didn't say could not, didn't say did not, would not utterly destroy. So he goes, as you know, and they do. There's what we're going to call partial obedience. He partially obeys God. He destroys most of the Amalekites, most of everything, but the orders were to destroy everything. Now, I made the comparison a while ago. David violated at least two of the commandments. All those commandments, everybody in Israel was under that. It didn't matter if you were royalty or a commoner. Everybody in Israel were subject to the Ten Commandments. Everybody had to live by that. Saul has a special assignment. Let me make a comparison. Noah had a special assignment to build an ark. You and I don't have to build an ark. David didn't have to build an ark. Joshua didn't have to build an ark. This was a special assignment. And he would not do it. So we get down there in the very famous verses of chapter 15, verses 22 and 23. When Samuel comes, he says, well, what have you done? He says, well, we spared these sheep and these oxen because we're going to sacrifice that to God. Verse 22. And Samuel said, hath the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to hearken than the fat of rams. For rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry. Because thou hast rejected the word of the Lord, he hath also rejected thee from being king. Samuel plainly says, obedience to the will of God is more, it's more pleasing, it's more acceptable. God's happier with obedience than he is with sacrifice. If you take anything away from this lesson, take this away. Obedience is the law of innocence. When Adam and Eve was in the garden, they were innocent until they disobeyed. Obedience is the law of innocence. Sacrifice is an attempt to take away what obedience would have prevented. That's why sacrifice came into the picture. It was because sin came into the picture. Samuel has to tell Saul this. But when you read the 51st Psalm, I think it's about verses 16 or 17, David says, I'm going to paraphrase it, I'd offer sacrifices if it would do any good. The sacrifices of God are a broken and a contrite heart. Samuel just thinks, well, I'll disobey God and then I'll make up for it with a bunch of sacrifices. Nothing is so provoking to God as disobedience. Now it begins to make a little more sense to me why his sin, if I can use this phraseology, it's probably not the right phraseology. His sin was worse than David's. All sin is bad, and I'm not going to stand up here and try to give anybody the idea that one's not as bad as the other. I suggest we don't do any of them. But Saul would not do that special assignment that was assigned to him.
He wouldn't do it. He had a better idea.
Can you imagine Noah saying, "Well, yeah, God, I know you want that built out of gopher wood, but I think I'd like to put some oak wainscot paneling in here and maybe some cherry touches." He said, "Build it out of gopher wood." And Noah didn't argue. Noah moved with fear, the book of Hebrews tells us. He feared God and he obeyed him. Saul figured he had a better idea than God. "I know you said to utterly destroy him, but I got a better idea." That's not a man after God's own heart. The book of Hebrews, the 5th chapter, verses 8 and 9. Speaking of Jesus, "Though he were a son, yet learned he obedience by the things which he suffered. And being made perfect, he became the author of eternal salvation to all them that obey him." So now, to me, suddenly, Saul's disobedience versus David's disobedience takes on a different complexion. He starts mixing his own will in with God's. "I got a better idea, God." A young couple's going to get married. Well, let me just give you an illustration. They're going to have a patriotic wedding. She's marrying a Marine. So they want red, white, and blue as their colors. She wants a white cake with red roses. And she wants all the napkins and paper plates and everything to be navy blue. So she hires the wedding planner. "This is what I want." So the wedding planner delivers the white cake, the red roses, "But I got a better idea because I got a really good buy on these napkins and plates. They're gold. I know it's not blue, but I saved you a lot of money." Is that obeying? If you had hired that man, would you pay him? Incomplete obedience is complete disobedience. And that's what Saul did. He would not, it says. Well, what's the source of his disobedience? It's pride. Verses 17 through 19 of 1 Samuel 15. Samuel says, "When thou wast little in thine own sight, when you actually viewed yourself the way you should, when you were humble, was not thou made the head of the tribes of Israel, and the Lord anointed thee king over Israel? And the Lord sent thee on a journey or on a special mission, a special assignment. Go and utterly destroy the sinners and the Amalekites and fight against them until they be consumed. Wherefore then didst thou not obey the voice of the Lord, but didst lie upon the spoil and didst evil in the sight of the Lord?" Back when you saw, when I first anointed you, you didn't think you were worthy of the job because you saw yourself correctly. You were humble. But now you think you got a better idea than God? Who do you think you are? Let's get some modern day applications here. Instead of the wedding, let's think of this. A person believes, repents, and confesses Jesus, but he refuses to be baptized. Is that obedience? Or how about, this is a pretty common one. He person obeys the gospel, lives a very morally upright life. But he just refuses to attend services. I feel closer to God out in the woods and on the lake and by the river. Is that obedience? Well, what if one believes but he doesn't repent? Well, I believe in Jesus. That's kind of partial obedience, don't you think? And here's one that I see a lot. People that do a lot of good works, they're just good people. They belong to different service organizations. And they do a lot of good things. They're good people, great neighbors. But they never obey the gospel. I don't know what they think. I can't read their hearts. I don't know if they think they got a better idea like Saul. But I know this story teaches us that incomplete obedience is complete disobedience. It could have been because he had an inflated opinion of himself. One other thing. Look at verse 21. This is, if you mark in your Bible, this is, I think, very telling. So after Saul or Samuel tells him, verse 20, let's back up. Saul says, "Yes, I have obeyed the voice of the Lord." In his mind, he had. "I've obeyed the voice of the Lord and have gone the way which the Lord has sent me. And here's Agag, the king of Amalek, and have utterly destroyed the Amalekites." Here we go with this excuse make. "But the people took of the spoil, sheep and oxen, the chief of things which should have been utterly destroyed, to sacrifice unto the Lord your God." He didn't even say, "We took these things because I thought sacrificing it to my God or our God would be a good idea." "I did this to satisfy your God." I don't even think he sees God as his God. That rebellion was not an isolated incident in Saul's life. His first special assignment, he didn't do it. His second special assignment, he wouldn't do it. It's true, David committed an evil sin. And he didn't get away with it. God's no respecter of persons. He was punished severely for it. But God is a respecter of character. As I said earlier, there's no indication that David ever repeated that sin. The very sin that Saul committed, where he lost his kingdom, he does it again two chapters later. It's because I think he really didn't have a relationship with God. He didn't really see God as his God. David seems to fall into the heading of what the Apostle Paul wrote in Galatians, the 6th chapter. "Brethren, if a man be overtaken in a fault, ye which are spiritual, restore such an one in the spirit of meekness, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted." David's sin seems to fall into that category. He was overtaken in a fault. And he's guilty, and he paid a heavy, heavy price. In the first chapter of that book of Galatians, about verses 8 and 9, Paul instructs those people, because he's disappointed that they're being removed from the gospel that he had preached to them, and says twice, If we or an angel from heaven preach any other gospel to you than that which we've already preached, let him be accursed. He didn't say refer to chapter 6, verses 1 and 2. Saul was guilty of toying around with what God said. I got a better idea. David wasn't guilty of that. When you look at when Nathan the prophet tells him, this is over in the 17th chapter, or about the 12th chapter of 2 Samuel. It wasn't said to David that your sin is as rebellion and stubbornness. That was not said to David. Because that wasn't the same. It was a sin, but he had different motivations. Sin is sin. Don't do any of them. But there is a difference between being overtaken in a fault and being so self-willed, stubborn, and rebellious to where you think you know more than God. I wouldn't go there. Because that's what Saul did. So for me, that was an exercise in trying to reconcile why one sin on a surface reading doesn't seem as bad as murder and adultery. And I'll say it again. David didn't get away with it just because he was a nice guy and had a nice smile. He paid a serious consequence for that. But the kingdom wasn't stripped from him. And he became the king that all other kings are judged by. Jesus isn't called the son of Abraham or the son of Moses. He's called the son of David. David was the first king of Israel that really tried to do for Israel what God wanted done. He's a man. He's listed in the 11th chapter of the book of Hebrews. Saul isn't. David was a man of faith. He was overtaken in a fault, and he paid the consequence for it. That can happen to us. It does happen to us. None of us are above sin. So the compliment that God pays to David, that he's a man after his own heart, does not mean sinless. It means that he pursued and followed after God. He stumbled and fell, as did Peter. But it was out of character for Peter to deny his Lord. But in a weak moment, he did. But it wasn't his routine, habitual, normal behavior. That seemed to be the routine, normal, habitual behavior of Saul. And I think it's because he really never really saw God as his God. If you're here this afternoon and you don't have that relationship with God that to where you can address him as Father, behold what manner of love the Father has bestowed upon us, that we should be called the sons of God. Jesus made that opportunity possible. Because we're not sinless either. Only Jesus lived a sinless life. The Son of David. The King of spiritual Israel. He could be your king. He could be your God. Don't take the attitude that Saul had. Be obedient. And if you've never obeyed the gospel and you would like to do that, if there's any other need that the church can assist you with, let us know what that is as we stand and sing.